HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 316, recorded live Thursday, April 26th, 2012. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support. Online at telerik.com. And by franklins.net, training developers to work smarter. And now offering Gesture Pack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Matt Howley about how the CodePlex team implemented the Git distributed source control system.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today I'm talking to Matt Howley, who is an infrastructure fellow at the Microsoft. You work in the TFS department, is that right?
Yeah, CodePlex recently moved under the TFS team, and so now I'm with the TFS team. I was previously not, but now I'm, I am.
And you roll up, you answer to ultimately Brian Harry, who's in charge of kind of all of TFS?
Yes, we do now.
You sound a little like, yeah, I guess so. You guys still getting used to a culture change moving over to that team?
There was a bit of a culture change coming over. One of my biggest concerns I had was kind of the how CodePlex would be felt within the TFS team. And, you know, being over here for 4 months now, I can definitely say that isn't the case anymore. Brian Harry has definitely been a great advocate of CodePlex and has put a renewed faith and an investment within CodePlex. And so, you know, we're doing a lot of cool stuff coming out, you know, Git support recently. We're doing a UI refresh and a lot of new stuff coming up over the next year or so.
Did you think that this is where CodePlex was going to go to die?
I didn't think it was going to go here to die. I just didn't know what was how it would be over in TFS. Since it seemed like the two teams were distinctly different, but you know, definitely coming over here, it was a shock in my mind to find out that it wasn't, and the similarities between the two teams and how they're. How both CodePlex was approaching, you know, software development, how TFS is now approaching software development.
Because the CodePlex team was agile, are they not? I mean, I remember I was looking at the CodePlex site and thinking to myself, wow, this thing hasn't changed. It looks really old. And I wonder if they're doing anything at all. And then someone said, well, look at the date in the corner. And it was like 3 days before. And apparently you guys were like deploying weekly.
Yeah, we follow the lean model over here now. So we do release weekly, or at least we attempt to release weekly. So far, we've been doing that successfully. We've used Kanban style approach to our backlog and work items and bugs and user stories and feature requests and whatnot to track it and to follow the swim lanes and whatnot. But we're total lean, and we go and we push stuff out as quickly as possible.
Very cool. And most recently, as you pointed out there briefly, that you now support Git. So CodePlex is a source forge, not like SourceForge, the one that we know about, but as a forge for storing your source, as a place to host and manage open source projects that now supports TFS, Mercurial, also known as HG, and Git. So you have three different source backends to manage here.
That is correct.
So I guess I imagine a whole bunch of, like when the TFS support came out, I figured, okay, there's a whole pile of TFS boxes in the sky. Are these in hosting? Are these in Azure? Are these virtual machines?
So right now, our TFS boxes are actually on-premise boxes. And we have four different application tiers and one gigantic SQL backend, obviously, with a mirrored pair. So those are currently sitting on-premise. The obvious future goal is for us to move to the cloud with some of the new TFS Azure stuff that they've been pushing out. And get closely more integrated with the TFS preview environment to host projects out there to eliminate the on-premise hosting that we have for TFS right now.
Mm-hmm. And then you support Git now. That's what I want to dig into. I want to understand how that was done. Is that a bunch of custom services you wrote? Is that in the cloud? And how do you back it up the same way? I mean, it's so different from TFS.
Right. So it is stored or hosted out in Azure, rather. It is in a Windows Azure environment set up with an extra large instance that we built out a set of custom APIs that the Coplex website actually talks to. And then we also host the Git HTTP backend or the Smart HTTPS backend protocol within IIS. And so we actually serve everything via IIS, and then on top of that, our source APIs or our REST APIs that we actually talk to are custom built, that we utilize libgit2 and libgit2sharp on the back end to actually do like 95% of our interactions or 98, somewhere in that range. There's only like three commands that we use to shell out to the executable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there's a lot said there, so let's deconstruct that and let's back up.
Sure.
So Git is a distributed source control system, and someone who's using Git has a complete history of the project on their local machine, and then they push up to other, they can push and pull between each other. People have called Git kind of FTP for source code. So is there an on-the-wire protocol that's an understood protocol?
So with Git, there's a couple. Obviously over HTTP, HTTPS, and that's the protocol we've used. There's other protocols, there's the Git and SSH protocol, basically, that is more commonly used in like Linux-based environments. We've chosen, obviously, the HTTP, HTTPS because we're sitting on the Windows stack, and it makes most sense for us to easily host from within IIS that way.
Okay. And that protocol is that something that you needed to go and create, or you're just talking that protocol straight to Git? How do you make a Git server, I guess, is my question.
Right. So what we do is we actually utilize, the CGI scripting, basically, in IIS to map a wildcard script into the HTTP backend executable. And so every time a request comes in that is Git-based, any request that comes in will actually get pumped over to the Git HTTP backend. And granted, there's a few ancillary setups that we have to do as far as setting some environment variables to basically say, here's where my repo list is or my repository directory is, and a few other configuration settings that off the top of my head, I don't remember they are, but there's like two environment settings. But yeah, I mean, everything comes in, it's served by IIS, pumped out to an executable that is distributed via the Git installer, and it runs that way.
So IIS still supports these older CGI bin kind of things. Like, we know that it does ASP.NET. I've seen IIS host Ruby. We know it does Node now, PHP. So you can use older style CGI, kind of just common gateway interface is what CGI stands for, and shell out to hosted executables.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we're doing. We're just, any request that comes in, go and actually execute this, Git HTTP backend.exe.
Do you know how it makes that transfer of like, here's, hey, CG, I guess CGI is that, that the interface such that it can hand off the HTTP connection, right? It's handing the socket over to that executable at this point, right?
How is it brokering that? Yeah, I'm honestly not entirely sure. You probably have to talk with someone in the IIS team. I've never really investigated that in depth.
Was that hard to figure out? I mean, were you surprised that IIS would do that? I'm a little surprised. Like, I know that it's so old school, I guess, in my mind.
From how we've been hosting Mercurial, it wasn't that big of a change because we host Mercurial in the same manner where, we're actually executing a Python script or Python.exe for Mercurial. And so we tried to figure out a way to doing the same thing with Git. And we found that, this Git HTTP backend.exe is exactly the backend piece that we needed. And so we set out based on some tutorials that people had for setting up running Git servers under Linux and Apache, and tried to map that knowledge to hosting in Windows under IIS. And so there was a decent amount of investigation and finding the right environment variables. And then, if we had to set up any IIS rewrite rules, we could using IIS Earl rewrite.
How are you debugging this kind of stuff? Was this using like Wireshark and looking at the traffic on the wire, or was there much
It was, I came in a little late to hosting it, so I'm not exactly sure what, Jonathan, who's the dev lead for Codeplex, he had done the original investigation into this and got the preliminary workings. I think a lot of it was just kind of plug and play and seeing what happened or what didn't. From the git command line on your client side, you can enable curl debugging, and so you can actually see everything that's going across the wire, all the headers and whatnot, and just right there in your command window. So you can see what it's actually doing going across the wire that way. And so we use that a lot to try and debug some of the other issues we were having as far as authentication and just kind of if for redirection purposes in some cases. And so that's what we utilize the most on the client side to debug the server itself.
What were some of the challenges? Like what broke and what did you sit on anything going, man, I don't know why it's acting like this?
Some of the issues we had, actually we didn't have that many issues getting GitHDB backend up and running. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest part was trying to figure out these two environment variables, one, the repository location, and two, the, basically just enabling it, within the server. Once we figured those out, it was, really easy to get it going, and it kind of just worked out of the box. We had a lot more investigation purposes when it came down to authentication because we needed to integrate it with Codeplex authentication, your username and password. So we had to figure out, across the wire, what exactly is it sending back and forth, which endpoints is it hitting when it goes in there? How can we determine, is this a push or is this a pull? And so there was actually, about a week's worth of investigation time just trying to figure that piece out. Of course, that was obviously once it was set up.
And the decision was made to use Codeplex's basic authentication rather than using SSH because that's the infrastructure that we have kind of set up already, and it fits in with the Codeplex style. So you can just log in to Git directly from your Codeplex user ID.
Yeah, and in reality, there's been a lot of talk recently about, Codeplex wanting us, or, people wanting SSH on Codeplex. And it really comes down to the fact that we would really like to have OAuth support or some type of OAuth support with, Git clients. So that way they could, use a token that, they can authenticate with, and then they don't have to actually use any usernames, passwords, or, SSH keys. SSH is notoriously hard to set up on Windows, and granted, there's some really easy tutorials out there to get it working under the bash script, or the bash shell. But even then, it's still kind of, it's still hard for Windows users, to utilize those capabilities.
When you're using Git under HTTP like this and you're hosting it, how does where that's storing the stuff? Where is the actual Git database, and how do you control? Like, are you just shelling Git out in the right folder that you know that user's code is in?
I think the request comes in. We don't have any mapping set up that says when ASP.NET webstack.git. That request comes in there. It needs to go to a specific folder. The Git HTTP backend with the environment variable saying, here's my root parent repo folder, it will map directly to that. And then the Git HTTP backend actually operates based on that directory if it's a Git repository. Granted, we host everything as bare repositories, so it doesn't need to do anything special as figuring things out. But so if you look at it, if you look at your local repo after you cloned, you'd see a .git folder. What bare repositories are is basically just that .git folder without any of the source code actually listed. And so it's extracted out, basically. And so that enables you to host things a lot more easily and do some stuff.
Mm-hmm. And when you're doing this in a way that's got a scale, which is the part that's going to be interesting for Codeplex, like if you look at GitHub, right, they're having no trouble scaling. I assume they're just scaling out as far as they need to, and they don't have any repositories that have gotten big enough to be a problem. I mean, no one's ever talked about Git scale too much.
Right.
Are you just going to add more Azure instances when you need to scale?
So right now is kind of where our hands are a bit tied because we are we're utilizing Azure Drives, and so so Azure Drives are basically blob store, mounted drives basically, and so all the everything is mounted from a blob store, you know, 1 gigabyte or 1 terabyte sized drive, and it basically maps it in Windows as a physical drive. And so that's how we've actually done it. The problem with Azure Drive right now is the fact that you can only have 1 read-write instance mounted at a single time. And so we are limited to a single instance running. And so scaling out for that single instance actually isn't going to work. So our thoughts are around using basically, you know, multiple instances that have their own set of Azure drives mounted and whatnot, and then utilizing like the ARR, the application request routing servers, to actually do some, you know, unique routing to specific Git servers down the road.
Okay, so if I understand this, you can take Azure Blob Storage and you can mount it as a drive.
Yep, and that is Azure drives.
And the maximum size is a terabyte?
I'm not sure if that's the maximum size. That's what we've set it up to be, which is fairly, it's actually fairly large. Speaking from over, I think, 45 to 5,000 repositories, maybe more, Mercurial repositories, you know, we've barely even touched 100 gigs for that many repositories. So I think, you know, a terabyte's going to last us quite a while for a single Git instance, basically.
That sure seems kind of small. I'm surprised. I would have thought this would have been larger.
I think a lot of it comes down to the way that Git is storing all of its meta information, as far as it's, you know, highly compressed and very small. And granted, you can have some Git repositories that are quite large if you store, you know, blob files within it. Or large blob files, but ultimately it actually is fairly small. The other nice thing is anytime you do a fork, we actually use hard linking within the Azure Drive instances. So every fork you do is actually fairly quick for Git, as well as it doesn't take up any additional space until you actually start making modifications to your fork's repository. So we save on drive space that way.
Oh, okay. And do you push your feedback back to the Azure team? Like, how do you, if you're finding that something that it's doing is not working for you, what do you do? Do you just call them up and say, hey, we want, like, if you needed more than a terabyte, you would just work with them and say, this is important?
We would probably just manipulate our code. I mean, we've written code that says, give me a terabyte of data. I'm not sure, off the top of my head, I'm not sure what the max size Azure drive that you can have. Right. But we just pull down a terabyte just because we feel that's probably a safe estimate.
Right. I'm just trying to understand the relationship between you and the Azure team.
Right. So we have been in talks with the Azure team to figure out a better scaling solution than using Azure Drive. There isn't currently anything in the pipeline that I'm aware of that would enable us to do this a lot easier. But, you know, any support issues that we have, they've been fairly responsive to getting things done. We've also got, you know, since we are within the TFS team, they're actually fairly integrated with them since TFS Preview is hosted at Azure. And so, you know, we also have another channel for, you know, people to listen to that way for any major issues.
What do you have to do in the CodePlex backend to tell it that you're going to use TFS for issue tracking and discussions and things like that, but not for source control?
So what we do, whenever you're on Git or Mercurial, work items are actually stored within SQL Server. Mm-hmm. So only if you're a TFS project do both your work items, your source control actually be stored in TFS. So I'll get that straight. So that actually kind of makes the conversation about how do we, you know, determine which one we do. And it's basically we have kind of, you know, different providers. So we've got, you know, the source control provider and a work item provider, basically. And then instances of, you know, a TFS or a SQL for work item providers, that we figure out, you know, we know which one you are, obviously, based on some data we have in the database. So at runtime, we go, hey, if you're TFS, use this provider. If you're, you know, using Getter Mercurial, use the SQL provider. And we do the same process for source control as well. You know, we know if you're TFS, Mercurial, or Gits, we can say use TFS or use Mercurial or use Git providers, basically.
Mm-hmm. Because I think that that's really interesting that it shows, like, I guess what I'm saying is people thought that how would TFS live in a world where there's Git? And here is, you know, CodePlex, almost like a, you guys have made it like a TFS playground where you're trying out new stuff before you put it in TFS. And it's like, here's TFS with all the, you know, the user tracking, the stuff that Git doesn't do sitting alongside Git. Plus you've got Mercurial and then you've got the Subversion bridge. So really you have four source control systems, but you're all using, the TFS stuff for the back end for the work items and bug tracking.
Well, again, only if you're a TFS project do we use TFS projects for work items. So, you know, Mercurial and Git are in the SQL store. So.
Oh, I see. So you're making it look like you're using TFS, but you're not.
Well, I don't think we're attempting to make it look like it. I hope not.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that the work items behave and move and open and close and do all the different stuff that they do no matter what kind you have. Like CodePlex looks like CodePlex no matter what source control you choose.
Yes, exactly. And that was the entire intention. We wanted to make things look seamless regardless of what source control system that, you know, the project owner actually chose. Mm-hmm. It just really comes down to how do contributors, you know, contribute back and how do they get to your source code? That varies, depending on if you're TFS or Mercurial or Git.
Hmm. Cause see, I'm trying to imagine that a lot of people think of TFS as just being this source control that they don't like. But I personally have found that the bug tracking and the work item stuff works just fine.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to figure out if I were going to use TFS for like my Scrum and for my lifecycle management, but use a different source control. What would that look like? And I think it would look kind of like CodePlex.
Yeah, I mean it would be great to obviously use that. The biggest reasons that we don't, you know, spin up a project for you know, Git and Mercurial projects out in CodePlex to mm-hmm. utilize work items is that it's a bit of a heavy process right now. You know, anybody that comes in and creates a TFS project realizes that there can be up to a 15-minute delay from when you create your project to when your work items and your source control is actually working. And that's because of a, you know, back-end process that we have that we're actually setting up a new TFS project in a collection that can take several minutes.
Hmm.
So for Mercurial and Git projects, we want that process to be as quick as possible. And so we've, you know, creating a new repository for both of those are fairly fast. I mean, they're, you know, we can do it right in line versus an ad hoc process. But at the same time, just utilizing SQL to store all of the work items makes it so there's no setup there as well.
I see. How big do you think that this would scale? I mean, it seems like a pretty straightforward system. And since they don't have to, there's no referential integrity. They can refer, you know, Git projects don't really refer to each other in that kind of ref external way that Subversion does. You could potentially scale this as much as you want. And
oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's our hope is that, you know, Azure is going to provide, you know, a significant scale to what our on-premise servers could do and that we could, you know, once we figure out how to, you know, scale the instance, the Azure Drive instance or use some other, you know, technology, then, you know, that's going to be enable us to really just kind of scale out versus, you know, or scale up versus scale out. So.
Have you found Azure to work pretty well? I mean, personally, as a developer, I was initially kind of not digging it, but it seems like it's getting better maybe since October.
It is getting better. Personally, I wish the tooling, the Azure tooling, would work in Dev 11 beta, but it doesn't right now, so there's times where I have to switch, because right now I do all my development in Dev 11 beta, but if I need to do anything with my Azure projects, I actually need to switch over to Dev 10 to do any configuration, because it's only supported there. But, you know, that's a personal side rant, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, it's worked great, you know, just kind of learning all about Azure and in the right ways of hosting different things, and getting things set up. It's been a good learning experience, and really makes you think of how can I make this so it scales a lot easier with the code that I have. Whereas before, you know, you kind of thought about, you know, I've got one or two boxes, you know, that's my scale. And then, oh, I need to add another couple boxes. What do I need to do now, type of thing. So you always have to go back and modify code. With Azure, it just kind of makes that, you don't have to think about that, because each instance just kind of spins up and starts working. Mm-hmm. Like I said, though, we didn't have that ability with Azure Drive, but I wish we would. So we're thinking of different ways to make that process a lot easier.
What do you personally think the difference is between Azure or the cloud and just having the stuff at a hoster?
Honestly, there's no real big difference for me, other than, I guess, it takes a little bit of time for your instance to get spun up in Azure. Whereas if, you know, you're on premise or whatever, you just basically do a copy your code from a file share out to, or a zip file or whatever, out to the actual server and deploy it basically that way.
But you mentioned the idea that, oh, I just want to go and get one more box. With a hoster, you have to either buy that box and go and put it co-located.
Yeah, exactly. And so that makes it a lot, from that aspect, it makes a lot more difficult to scale and to obtain new hardware with Azure. It's just kind of like, well, I want to add one more instance. So you just bump your instance count and it just, you know, everything kind of gets taken for you, or taken care of for you.
Yeah. What do you have in the queue for CodePlex in the next couple of months? What can you tell me? What features? Because if you're doing this, if you're putting stuff out every week, you're not just fixing bugs.
Right. Right now, we are trying to wrap up our UI refresh, and depending on when this actually hits the airwaves, it may or may not be released. We're targeting the end of April for a release of our UI refresh. And that's something that, if you look back at kind of Brian Harry's blog, and I think we actually blogged about it too, it was about a month ago, right after we announced Git support, we said, hey, let's check it out. Here's some screenshots of what we're thinking. And so that's actually coming fairly soon. And we're trying to wrap up all the, what we consider, you know, tier one, pages to look nice and look all, I guess, metro, not green, basically. So that's coming real soon, and we're really happy about that. And so that's our next big feature. Anything beyond that, I'm not entirely sure, because we've been focused so much on the UI refresh after the Git stuff that I do know that we're going to start working on some pull requests, updates to make it easier for users to do stuff. So that's in the queue. Anything beyond that, you know, it's too far out. You know, we're a fairly lean team, so we're actually thinking in 3 weeks out anyways. So
when you're releasing every week, what kind of things are you just fixing bugs, or are you going into your issue tracker and going on the things that are the most voted on? Because I've noticed that CodePlex has done that for a long time. You've always done the feature that more people have voted on. Do you just pull off of that queue?
Yeah, Git was our number one feature. It's number one or number two, one of those. It was, you know, right up there at the top of things. So we are definitely looking at our public feature request list that, you know, everybody votes up on. So we've done that. We've looked at, we pull from there. We pull bugs from our public list, and we pull bugs from our internal test team, or, you know, Twitter reports or support requests. And so, you know, we pull all those things in, we triage them, and we try and fix all P1 bugs, you know, the bugs that are blocking users from functioning every week. And other than that, we start looking at user stories or feature requests and try and roll those in a week-by-week basis. And, the only problems we've had is that, any long-running feature requests, we don't get to push those out as frequently because they can take quite a lot longer. But you know, how we actually do development is that, you know, all those features are mostly out in production as it is. It's just that they're not enabled yet. For instance, Git was sitting out in production for about a month before we actually enabled it while we finished up everything around it. So, you know, if you got into, you know, what we consider our preview server, you actually had done, you know, created a Git project prior to us actually releasing for several weeks. But, you know, that's something that's not accessible externally, but, you know, that's how we actually approach doing, you know, long running features that we continuously work on, you know, our master branch and then, you know, just hide features or disable them until we think they're ready for the public to consume them.
Mm-hmm. Some people have said that they wish that the CodePlex itself would be open sourced because I think they want to run their own internal CodePlex. Have you guys ever talked about that internally?
That's been a conversation that's come up time and time again. And what it really comes down to is that to set CodePlex up is not an easy task. And so, you know, we've always kind of, you know, asked why customers want the source for CodePlex. And usually it's, you know, we want the same type of thing in our company. And so, you know, we'll have a little bit of discussions with them. And ultimately it comes down to, you know, I'm not entirely sure that this would be the right fit for your company. Internally at Microsoft, we've had several teams that have requested the same thing. And, you know, since we're in Microsoft, they can take a look at the source code and try and set it up on their own. We've never really seen a successful deployment. So, and not saying that nobody else could deploy CodePlex. I'm just saying that the amount of infrastructure and knowledge around CodePlex doesn't really make it so it's a good open source project.
Hmm. Yeah, it's something that people like the idea of it, but maybe not the actual implementation of it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, to really think about it, you know, we've got, you know, a significant amount of infrastructure actually running between, you know, our various web servers, SVM Bridge servers, our TFS servers, our Mercurial and Git servers, and now our ARR servers that I was talking about. So there's quite a significant amount of infrastructure that goes into play, and it's not something you could set up and run very easily in a development environment without knowing the nitty-gritty details of how everything actually works together.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think we're all going to look forward to seeing the continued improvements and the refresh. And is there, I guess on the blog now, there's release notes, so you can go and see the CodePlex blog and see regularly what's being updated and what's being improved.
Yep. We every time we do a release, we put out there the bug fixes that we've done or any new features that we've added. It's been pretty good recently. So,
well, I'm glad. I'm glad things are working out well over on the TFS team.
Yeah, so are we.
Cool. Thanks a lot. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. I'll see you again next week.